Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, we have old friend Masaki Miyagawa on to tell us about the latest developments going on in Asia, related to China, Japan, Korea, the Far East in general, and what's going on in relation to the global geopolitical chessboard. So, without any further ado, Masaki, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hey James, glad to be back.
Glad to have you. Well, give us the inside scoop of what the heck's been going on. And it seems to me that from what you're telling me and from what I've gleaned from other sources, things are hiding up in Asia.
Yeah, well, you could frame this in the greater context of, I guess it's the collapse of the post World War II system. So I would say that most, if not all, of the nations are post World War II constructs. That, I mean, that's definitely true with Israel. And then Japan, they lost the war, and their constitution's literally written by Americans. Germany, right? They were split and so forth. So a lot is built off of, I guess you could say, the boomer construct. It's falling apart. So that's, I guess you could call it the Great Reset, because the system has come to an end. And then, let's say in alchemy, for the new world to be born, you have to destroy the old. You can't have the new without putting the old system to bed, and that's sort of what's happening right now. And also, just like in biblical prophecy, which is funny, because if anyone has read or seen Frank Herbert's Dune, you know, there's a series of Dune movies, and then there was the original back in the 80s. The esotericists, the Bene Gesserit witches, they create the prophecy so they control the outcome, right? So if you have these prophecies of the great dragon, which is read as China, being part of the final battle. And well, what are we seeing right now? It's basically CCP China. They're not really communist anymore. It's like authoritarian capitalism, right? It's China versus the Z team, which is America and Israel. That's basically what it is. And if you look at it through that lens, then a lot of things come into focus. Like, we saw the massive wave of, what was it, 50, 60,000 Moroccans move into that port town. I forget,
Ceuta, however you pronounce it.
Ceuta. I mean, that's all about the control of the Straits of Gibraltar, right? Because Spain is, I would say, they're a partner of China, and they also have a leftist government. So I wouldn't say that they're completely controlled by China. There's some leftist, you know what, influence in Spain. Like, they're total open borders government. But the fact that Spain is friendly with China, the Z team can't have that. So I think that the recent events are a move to destabilize the Straits and then put it under basically American control. And that's true with a lot of the conflicts that are happening now. I mean, look at Iran, Straits of Hormuz. Another one would be Panama, right? And interestingly enough, the Colombian government just had a pro-US president installed. So I wasn't expecting that because Colombia is a strong partner with China, right? And why is this significant? Because Panama used to be Colombian land. At the time, over 100 years ago, it was basically swampland. Nobody wanted it. And the US negotiated with the locals in Panama and said, we're going to set you up, but you have to grant us rights in perpetuity to the canal. Although it was later given up for basically for nothing. What was it, $1 or something? So if China was to secure control of the straits, I mean, secure control of the Panama Canal, it would probably be Colombia that would do it because they have like an ancestral claim to Panama, even though they just let it go at the time because it was worth nothing, right? And then you have the Straits of Malacca in Southeast Asia. And you basically have China. It's like World War II again, but China is playing the Japanese role. So, what would you do if you're a Western power and you want to undercut China? Well, you would take control of the shipping lanes in Southeast Asia. Just like ha what happened in World War II, Japan had the first and second island chains, right? They were all over Southeast Asia. And you would basically try to push China into famine by cutting off all the resources and especially the food, right? So I don't think that it will be full out war as people think of it, like a World War III. There are going to be these regional conflicts, but they're it's I would say it's more economic than cutting supply lines, right? I mean, if you follow Michael Young, he's always talking about routes and resources. So that's a lot of what's happening, but in within China, well, first of all, I would say that all of the governments, because they're boomer governments, are in trouble, right? And if you look at astrology, the generational there's like generational trends ruled by the outer planets and especially Pluto. So the boomer generation was Pluto and Leo, right? But it's been so long since the boomers were born, it's come around to the opposite sign. Now we're in Pluto and Aquarius. So what does that signify? Basically, everything that's happening now, the energy, the trend, it's opposing the energy of the boomers in that time. So it's just like I said, the time of the post-war environment has come to an end. And now we're seeing a great reset, right? But a lot of people don't know that China itself, although clearly China has been on an upward track, because while China has a long history, the history of modern China starts in 1949. So it's basically within living memory. And a lot of the traditional culture was destroyed in China. Chinese communities outside China, like in Singapore or Malaysia, Hong Kong, although Hong Kong's now part of China again, the overseas Chinese communities often have more traditional Chinese culture than within mainland China. And it was and is an authoritarian state. So in some ways it was a benefit because you can do a lot of things like if you want to put in metro lines or train lines, right? You have no the average person has no rights. The government most likely would set you up in a new place, but if they say you have to move, you have to move. Now, if you're in a Western country, it's a lot harder to do that. You just can't take people's property and move them around willy-nilly, right? But in China, since the state is king, they could do a lot of big infrastructure projects and so forth. But because it's an authoritarian state, I would say it's very unbalanced. And China has something in common with America. It's a revolutionary country. Like modern China is a revolutionary country because it comes out of communism, right? And you can see that in their natal chart, right? It's they're like October, I think it's October 1st, 1949. They're a Libra sun, but they have, I think it's Aquarius rising, definitely Aquarius moon, and Aquarius is the sign of revolution, you know? So the character, that revolutionary character is unstable. It's sort of like chaotic. And so all the imbalances that have been building for decades, you're starting to see now in China. Like just the rights of the average person. It's very hard to voice your opinion if there's problems, because it's all top down. The party members, they have the ultimate say. So an average person, it's very difficult if someone above you, they not only have the money, but they have the political connections to shut you down. And there was sort of an unsaid agreement that the public would be okay with the CCP running everything as they have been since the foundation of Communist China, as long as the economy was running strong, right? And that worked for a long time. Basically, from, I would say, like China, they started opening in the 1980s, but it was really the 1990s when they really started running strong. So from the 90s until basically COVID, you couldn't fail. Like Chinese companies and Chinese people were making a lot of money. So what is that like? A 20-year block where it was just, you know, it's nothing you couldn't do in China, you know? The guy that really started, although, you know, we know the story with Kissinger and Daddy Bush. It was really America that helped China open up to the West, right? It sounds like engineering a future problem, right?
Yes.
Like they had to know that in building China up, it would become an opposition to America. But that goes back to what I was saying before. I don't think it's 100% planned that everybody on each side is on the exact same plan. But I think they did have a general idea to build up an enemy for the time we're in now. It was Deng Xiaoping. He said, well, what was happening was in the late 70s and early 80s, it was very clear that communism wasn't working. Because in the communist world, Russia or the Soviet Union is the big dog. They were like the pinnacle. Although the Chinese tried to claim that they were the leaders of worldwide communism, look where the Bolshevik Revolution and communism came from, right? It was Russia. And they just couldn't compete with the capitalist model of the West. So China knew that they were going to have to do something, right? And Deng Xiaoping, he actually, although China, they have a lot to say about Japan today, at that time, actually, Japanese and Chinese relations were quite good. And he visited Japan to see what the Japanese were doing. And at that time, right, you're talking about 1980s, that was like the pinnacle of the Japanese economy. So he looked at what the Japanese were doing and he went back to China and he said, it doesn't matter if it's a white cat or a black cat, as long as it catches the mice. So his meaning was, we're going to change our model to a capitalist model as long as it benefits China. And actually, that was the right choice because if you fast forward another like 5, 10 years, then the wall fell, right? The model of the Soviet Union collapsed. Meanwhile, China, they were already making steps to build the system that quote unquote made China great. But with command economies, you know, the communist governments are generally what you call command economies, where the government dictates every aspect of the economy. You get a large amount of corruption and imbalance because there's a lot of things that the central government just cannot. It's like one man trying to figure out the entire economy. You know? So there have been massive mistakes under the CCP, and that goes back to like the 50s when Mao Zedong, who was like he was basically the emperor of China. It was called the Chinese Communist Party, but he basically became the emperor. He made massive like dictates, which caused tens of millions of Chinese to die through famine. He said, well, it was like Kill the Sparrows campaign. This was in the 50s. He said, the birds are the pests. So everyone across China, they went out and banged on pots and pans until the sparrows would fly in circles and they would just drop dead, right? Well, the next season, there were no birds to eat the insects, and so you had huge locust swarms that ate all the crops, and then tens of millions of people died. And then also, you basically had to do what the government told you to do, or you're going to be sent to a gulag or killed, right? So, central government, Beijing, would say, like, we want to harvest, this is our goal. We want to harvest so much grain this year, right? And the local politicians, they would have to fulfill that, or else they're gonna be kicked out of power, right? Replaced with somebody else. So what they would do is they would send that amount of grain, but they're pulling from the local food supply of the people just to fulfill that amount. And the central government would say, great. Well, next year you have to collect even more. So it resulted in famines, basically. Right? But they got past that period, and China did flourish. You know, I would say basically until COVID. And that liberalization of China, which Deng Xiaoping started around 1980, it was doing well until Xi Jinping, the current president, came into power. And I think it was around probably 2012 to 2015, somewhere around there. He was making clear moves to go back to a Mao style government. And that, you know, since Xi Jinping got into power, there have been power struggles with various factions within the Chinese government. But Xi Jinping has maintained supremacy through purging everybody else. Like the military. There's almost no senior leadership left that was there originally because he's continually purging the people that might be a threat. And he had, like, you know, Mao is famous for having the Little Red Book, like the sayings of Chairman Mao. It was basically a Mao cult. And if anybody looks up the Cultural Revolution, they would wave the Little Red Book. That's Mao's Red Book. Xi Jinping came out with his own book. So he's clearly trying to be like a Mao figure. And interestingly enough, we started, you know, in astrology, they have various periods, or they call transits. The planets are moving and it lasts for a certain period of time. We're in Uranus and Gemini. And that is exactly what was happening in times of war and chaos throughout history, you know, like World War II. And I forget if it's Uranus and Gemini, but right now, because you have various transits happening. Right now, the energies are the same as the late 60s when the Cultural Revolution was happening, you know. You have the situation where, you know, I lived in China in the late 90s, and I can tell you, whatever you think about China, they definitely, I mean, I would say it's night and day. You know, even at that time when I was living in China, the same street would be remodeled once or twice in 1 year. Like they would knock everything down and rebuild it, right? They definitely built a lot of infrastructure. People's lives improved. But there's a difference between, like, let's say Japan or even South Korea as an example. South Korea and Japan are first world developed countries, right? The thing is, Japan, they got rich before the economy collapsed. The Japanese economy collapsed in 1991 and has never really recovered, right? But they got rich before the collapse happened. The difference is China, the economy collapsed before they got rich. Like Taiwanese, like Taiwan is a small island, right? But the average Taiwanese is much richer than the average mainland Chinese. So, why is this a problem? It's a problem because there's so many imbalances internally in China that have never been addressed. And now the average person is under pressure, right? So, why are they going to listen to the authoritarian government if their life is basically falling apart? You know, it's to the point where noodle shops and places that sell steam buns are going out of business because, you know, of all people, Chinese are one of the most economically minded and frugal people. So if they know their budget is only so much, then they'll say, okay, I'm gonna stop eating out. So, businesses across the board are failing in China, and foreign businesses especially are pulling out. So it doesn't look good economically in China. That doesn't mean that in the future they could go to another level, but currently, right now, it's pretty dire. The banks, they're having bank runs. I mean, this has been going on since COVID. The people have significant amounts of money in the bank, and then they can't get it out. You might have heard of Evergrande, right? It was a real estate development company. And Chinese people typically don't invest in stocks. They invested in real estate. Well, the real estate market collapsed. So all the money that they made over like 10 or 20 years is gone. It's like half, at least half gone, right? So what comes out of this? Well, James, there's a lot of unhappy people in China. So, but I think that this is not that different than other nations. People across the world are they're feeling it in their pocketbook. And the governments are afraid. So they're making moves to lock down across the board. It's just that within China, the government has a lot more leverage to do so because, throughout their history, even in the imperial period, I mean, you didn't have no rights. What are you, peon, gonna say against the emperor, right? Or the local lord or village elder, right? It's just that in China, the government has a lot more leverage to do whatever they want. Other things that are happening within China, the right now they're getting hit with like 100-year storms. I don't know. Being that I'm talking with you, I think you would agree there's a great possibility this could be weather warfare. I mean, I've never seen the kind of storms that are hitting China, and it's like one after the other. And these typhoons, they're just going straight into China, one after the other. And it's not being reported to the extent of the damage. It's not really being covered within China. There's a province called Guangxi. It's in the interior, and like if you know where Vietnam is, it's like north of Vietnam, or if you know where Hainan Island is, it's north and in the interior. Guangxi, it looks like a Tartaria mud flood. It looks like that. It's like mud, like the water came through, there was flooding. And the mud is up to like the second or third floor of buildings. And I've heard estimates of 100,000 to 500,000 people are probably dead. It's significant. These kind of like acts of God or weather events are significant. Because if you know Chinese cosmology and Chinese culture, they have what they call the mandate of heaven, where you come to the end of a dynasty, and this happens all over the world, but I do think it's true and informative. You come to the end of this dynasty, the princes, the sons of the emperor, are totally degenerate. They don't even know how to run the government. The eunuchs, if you know about eunuchs, they worked in the government, and they would get the ear of certain ministers or the prince or the emperor, and it was actually them that was running the government, right? So basically, say corruption took over. And one of the main functions of the government was to maintain the dams and waterways, and they would stop maintaining the public works basically, and then you would have massive floods. Does this sound familiar? They would have massive floods, and then basically the people would get fed up and they would overthrow the current emperor, and a new emperor would come, and then the cycle would start all over again. So there's a reason why the Chinese government is not reporting on all the floods that are happening, because it plays direct. I mean, this is deep in the Chinese psyche. I would say there's probably not one Chinese that doesn't know about this cosmology. When you see massive floods happening in China and the government isn't doing anything about it, that's a bad sign for the government. Because every Chinese know, like is the thought comes up, is this the mandate of heaven? Like, is it time for the government to be overthrown? And when you're talking about the Chinese population, which I don't think it's 1.4 billion, but let's just say it's like 700 million or 800 million. That's a lot of people to stay on top of. So you could understand why the Chinese government is so repressive, because there's a possibility of the entire of China, Chinese people rising up. But also, one of the greatest fears in Chinese culture is the chaos, because they've had multiple dynasties that ran, let's say, 200, 300 years, and then it would collapse into chaos, and then another one would rise, and then it would collapse. So they've been through multiple rises and falls, and so it's not just the fear of losing power, but it's the fear of the country devolving into factionalism and warlords. And that's kind of what China's facing right now, you know? So, in the global scheme of East versus West, I think you rarely hear of what's going on internally within China, you know? I mean, if you look at what's happening in the West, you know, it's a quote unquote conspiracy, but things are collapsing. But if you look at China, it's not so different. The only difference is they don't have like massive numbers of migrant workers, you know? But the situation is not good internally within China. And I heard that you can't prove this, but there's people that suspect that a couple hundred million Chinese died during COVID. Couple hundred million. And they don't think that there's 1.4 billion Chinese. They're saying like maybe it's like 700, 800 million. And if you look at the big cities like Shanghai and Beijing, people are saying the city is half empty. But then if you look at the countryside, the countryside villages are empty too. So where did the people go? That's the question. I don't know, but so yeah, I think one of the key points that I wanted to convey to the listeners is that they are trying to pit the common people against each other, whether it's in Australia or here in America. They're trying to get common people to fight against each other. And then what's better than to pit Westerners against the average Chinese? It's really the leadership, right? These or you could call them Epstein class. Because trust me, There's definitely a Chinese Epstein class. We just don't hear about it, right? It's I would call it the managerial class of mankind. They're trying to stay in power, and have like the average person fight it out. There's definitely beefs. I mean, there's definitely a beef between China and the Zionists, right? But at a higher level, I think they're just trying to maintain their power. And if you look at the key things that this so-called World Economic Forum, the Klaus Schwab types, what do they want? Cashless society, right? Well, China did that a long time ago. And Brazil, one of the main partners with China, they want cashless. They use QR codes. They call it PIX, PIX. They want cashless a long time ago. So you have to ask yourself, how different is this BRIC system than a so-called Western New World Order, right? I think that the big dogs that are ruling the planet, they all agree that it's going to be a certain type of system. They're just battling to try to be the dominant player. Or let's say they may even agree at some level that the world is going to be so-called multipolar, because the unipolar world emerged when the Berlin Wall fell. There was no longer a Soviet Union, and basically America was the sole superpower, right? That was the unipolar world. When the multipolar world is where you have various spheres of influence. And so all of this may be just to create chaos, because I said before, to create the new world, you have to destroy the old. So what's better, to create chaos so you could rearrange the board, but it's basically going to be America and the Zionists control the Americas, North and South America. China gets maybe Africa and Asia, and Russia takes Eastern Europe, you know? I've thought that there's in terms of like what's happening in Europe, I think that Russia and America are playing a game to destabilize Europe, and then America gets Western Europe and Russia gets Eastern Europe. Because the Europeans, I'm sorry to say, but they're basically useless. They have no military power. They're completely destabilized by all the migrants. They're economically weak. Like, if you combine all the stock markets of Europe, it doesn't even come close to the American stock market. Basically, all they have is wine cheese and like historical buildings. You know, it's like a historical theme park, but they talk real big, but at the end of the day, Russia could easily take Eastern Europe, you know? And if the Americans don't really want to fight that battle, or they've, like I said, you can't prove this, but this is what I'm thinking. If there's sort of a tacit agreement that you guys take the, you know, just like what was the Cold War? That was basically how it was under the Soviet Union. America controlled Western Europe and the Soviet Union controlled Eastern Europe. So, yeah. Do you want to say something?
Well,
I was just
there's
rambling.
just so much to unpack there, but just
Yeah.
last point that you made, Putin has said that he has no interest in Eastern Europe because it's such a mess and it's all tied up in that whole vampire ball Epstein class environment. But if Eastern Europe were to fall like a ripened plum, through gravity and through its like it, the whole implosion process. I don't think he would be averse to that because some of these European states, at least some of the politicians, they know which side the bread is buttered on. They've seen what happens when you align yourself with the Atlanticist Zionist crowd. You get endless immigration, you get all your factories, all your power plants shut down. It's like the that plan that the Morgenthau plan for all of Europe, right? Not just post-war Germany. So a lot of countries, there's some talk as to whether how long the European Union slash NATO can even last, because there's so many pressures and fissures within it at this point. And the immigration, the unlimited immigration, I mean, Poland basically has their own borders intact. They still have some immigrants in the country causing trouble. But if you look at how the West, these Navy divers had blown up the Nord Stream pipeline and other heinous things, all that was set up to create, ahead of everyone else, it seems to me, this economic meltdown, power outages, famine. When the famine hits in Europe, look out, because I forget the process, the name of the process that was developed that utilizes fertilizer, what have you, in order to enhance
Yeah.
crop yields, right?
Germans invented it.
Yeah, the Germans invented it, and that's all going out the window. They've systematically shut down all the power plants, the clean coal powered energy plants, shut down the nuclear plants. So really, and the immigrants, they came from places where they were lucky to have tents and any kind of a dwelling to live in. So if they're living in a place, i.e., Europe, that has no power. Everything is just running amok. They're going around, running around like Saracens again, decapitating and raping women. That's fine with them because their standard of living, what they're accustomed to, is so low anyway. So basically, the Europeans, through incessantly allowing these socialist parties to take root and eventually take over, they made their own bed. So, Putin's take, from what I've heard in the past, is, why would I want to inherit that mess? But on the other hand, if one or more former, let's say, looking into the future, European Union countries say, oh, no, sticking with the Anglo-Zionist sphere of things has been nothing but trouble. Let's see what we can do if we start to have relations with Russia. Of course, that will probably lead to assassinations of the various politicians that are thinking in this way. Look at how many po candidates for the AfD in Germany got rubbed out, right? In the run up to the last election. But you were going to say something?
No, I he dropped out for a second, but I can
Oh,
hear you
sorry.
now.
And also, getting back to the Chinese thing, you mentioned that you felt that there was going to be a lockdown at some point coming. Perhaps soon.
Oh, that's
Yeah,
right.
and just hold that thought, just as a backdrop to that. We've seen in the past when regimes are starting to falter, you have unrest amongst the citizenry, and you talked about the mandate of heaven. That's such a key concept for Westerners to understand, because from the traditional Chinese mindset, when the country, China, begins to have all these seemingly natural disasters, floods, storms, earthquakes, what have you, in their cosmological scheme of things, the mandate of heaven has been removed from the current regime. So, from their standpoint, the divinity, gods, however you want to describe them, are no longer looking favorably upon the current regime. Therefore, the mandate of heaven has been removed. So, if the people want to rise up and depose said regime, so much the better. Go into a state of chaos. Eventually, another authoritarian regime is granted the mandate of heaven, and then they take over for a while. And we've also seen in the past These are imperfect examples because we know that Japan, Imperial Japan, was goaded into an expansionist policy. There's a lot of the hardliners in the Japanese army, etc., back then in the 1930s, didn't need much encouragement, right? But clearly, they were goaded and encouraged to attack Tsarist Russia by Anglo-Zionist elements. And because they were an island nation and they had a huge, burgeoning, growing population, reliant on so many imports just to feed their, I mean, there's only so much, fish you can harvest from the oceans and only so much rice you can grow. So they had their own problems, which necessitated their own version of Lebensraum in Manchuria, what they called Manchukuo,
And Taiwan, they basically put infrastructure into Taiwan, and they were getting large amounts of grain, rice, basically.
Was for, called Formosa then. And Korea, of course, they talk about how the Nazis looted Europe. Well, the Japanese had a head start for 50 years before the Third Reich came into being. They were systematically looting Asia. But the point of relevance is, for a variety of reasons, Japan, and also the possibility of unrest if the petroleum reserves ran out, if and also the U.S. imposed all those embargoes, right? No more scrap metal, no more tin, no more rubber from Malaya, and no more oil from what was then Dutch Indonesia. This compelled, for a variety of reasons, the Japanese to have an expansionist, particularly southward, advance to get those resources, right? So, point of relevance here is, if it seems to the Chinese leadership, this corporatism with a CCP face you were talking about, if it seems to them that in order to be able to feed their population, not that they really care about them because they've been killing them off. I mean, you talked about the Cultural Revolution earlier, and the recently how so many people, hundreds of millions of people, have disappeared in the recent past. But at any rate, if the Chinese feel compelled to have an expansionist policy in order to mollify, calm down their citizenry, because we've seen this in the past, right? Where regimes that are in trouble, they initiate a war, right? In order to get everyone on side, what have you. And also keeping in mind the Chinese, just as the Israelis for so long, they relied on so-called Sionism. Anyone of Jewish descent throughout the world could be called upon at any given time to render assistance to the Zionist cause. Something like that goes on with the CCP, where in many Western countries, if there are these traditional blocks of Chinese in throughout the world, Australia, America, Great Britain, whatever the case may be, that are anti-CCP, anti-communist, they will prevail upon the local ministers and MPs and bureaucracies, which they, finance and which they control, to go after those groups, right? The Chinese have set up all these cultural friendship organizations all over the world, buddying up with Western politicians, what have you. So there's a ready-made or worldwide organization to encourage Western politicians to be friendly towards, they even give them a title, friend of China, right? To be friends towards China, but at the same time suppress, infiltrate, subvert these anti-communist Chinese groups. All that plays into what we're talking about. Do you see a more aggressive, overt Chinese policy? You talked about Colombia earlier. Colombia used to own what became Panama, but a Wall Street coup, Sullivan and Cromwell, all that made that what eventually became an American client state for so long. And so there's a large Chinese CCP military presence in the Panama Canal Zone, Colombia, etc. How does that all tie into the notion that they may have like a nationwide lockdown in China and perhaps a more overt aggressive policy such as closing off the Malacca Straits? I mean, you've got the floor.
I was messaging you offline, and just within the last couple weeks, it came out that people, Chinese citizens within China, are now being blocked from leaving the country. Like, they already had the visa. They're at the airport. And they're like, sorry, you're not leaving China. And also, Chinese people with foreign citizenship or foreign passports are now being detained when they visit China. There was a Chinese guy that is a Japanese citizen. He has a Japanese passport. He went to visit China, and then when he was about to leave China, they detained him. They forced him to go to the Japanese embassy and renounce his citizenship. And now he's trapped in China. He lives in Japan. He was a Japanese citizen. His business is in Japan and his family's in Japan, and now he's basically trapped in China.
So potentially, hold that thought. So potentially, if an Australian of Chinese descent, ethnicity, with like born in Australia, for example, with an Australian passport, potentially if they go to China for whatever reason, the
They could
same
be
thing could
detained.
happen. Oh my
Yep.
goodness.
The so there's a new law that just came out, and it takes full effect in September. So I mean, they're already basically blocking a lot of people from leaving China, but it will be official within 1 month that it will be very difficult to leave China. And I was telling you, that tells me that something big is going to happen. Like, it could be the war in the Middle East goes to another level, or it could be related to global economic collapse, or both. And some of the things that they're doing for the overseas Chinese is they're starting to see if you didn't close, I don't know what the word is, it's not citizenship, but you're registered with, they call hukou, it's like your local address connected to the district that you live in. Like, because China is very controlled, you just can't move to another city willy-nilly. It has to be, you have to go through the proper channels, you have to have the right paperwork, because basically your ID is tied to your neighborhood. And if these people moved overseas and they didn't close out their registration within their neighborhood within China, basically to the Chinese government, you're still Chinese. And there could be taxes there and so forth. Or they may look into your overseas income and charge you the equivalent of tens of thousands of dollars. So, at some level, I wouldn't say the main reason is revenue collection, although they're doing that. I would say the main reason is to, because a lot of people don't realize this, but your population is a resource. And a lot of the party members and wealthy Chinese, they already left a long time ago, or they got residencies or citizenship in Canada, UK, America, Australia, and so forth. It's a lot of the mid and lower tier Chinese that are now trying to get out of China. But I think it's a measure to stop the outflow of Chinese, but also it's letting people know who's boss, right? That's a lot of it. Because a lot of Chinese, they don't even have the money to leave China. But when they do something like this, it's like it's the Chinese government flexing its muscle.
We see the hold that thought. We see the exact same thing overseas, where the Chinese consulates and embassies and their friendship fellowship organizations exert a tremendous amount of power. They exert a lot of power against the local governments, say if there's a spy scandal or some kind of
Well, they have police departments.
yes.
They have like quote unquote unofficial police departments,
Yes, and
right?
what they try to do is police the local Chinese. Now, to be sure, there are a great many increasingly CCP oriented Chinese overseas in the various Western countries, but there's still a significant block of people of Chinese descent who identify as traditional Chinese that want nothing to do with the CCP, and they're aghast at the notion that the CCP and their affiliated corporations are establishing such a foothold in these Western countries. And so when these people speak out, these anti-communist Chinese, when they speak out in public gatherings and when they ask their local politicians to do something about all this CCP intimidation to the local Chinese, a lot of times the local authorities are just hamstrung because so many of them are bought off, influenced, bribed, set up and swallow honeypot type operations with Chinese seductresses, let's say, and all the rest of it. It's amazing the amount of influence the CCP wields overseas. And we see this also along the whole West Coast of America. It's all just communized, socialized. They're deliberately allowing, through these soft on crime policies, these blue cities on the West Coast to just go to hell in a handbasket, leaving them ripe for the plucking, especially when you got a guy like Gavin Newsom who's storing arms for the Chinese CCP, for crying out loud. So, in the time you got left, the last couple of minutes of this first segment, is there any other thoughts you want to add to that?
Well, I would say that a lot of these things are too big for one person to have any effect on. But you could look at the mo larger movements and you could try to prepare for yourself in your own way for the large dislocations that are coming. Because, I mean, obviously, we are in quote unquote World War III, but a lot of it's going to be economic, you know? And we're not that far from the COVID time, and we kind of got a taste of what that's like. But now it's going to be, you know, probably cyber attack, threat of, you know, false flag or real, you know, various disruptions. So quote unquote terrorist events. But I think a lot of it is going to be economic and resource related, like food and so forth. So I would just have some emergency supplies just so you don't have to panic. And let's say if there's a food shortage or there's a panic. You know, kind of like in COVID when at least here in LA there were long lines at the stores because people wanted to get their toilet paper or something. I remember several times I waited in line about an hour just to get into the supermarket, you know. If you have some supplies, I don't think having like 10 years of dried food is really gonna. You know, if you have it, great, but I think that's a little bit impractical. But it's more about not having to go out for food when at the worst time, you know?
Yes, when there's utter chaos, when there's this looting and just brigandage all over the place. I remember those toilet Mad Max days. We don't want to harm you. All we want is the toilet paper. You'll be free to leave. At one point, I kind of doubled to the back of the line, right? I'd already got my allocation of toilet paper, and I tried to be cheeky and go to the back line and come in and, kind of like present this facade of an entirely different being, right? So I can get some more toilet. But no, lady was like, and it's interesting how personalities changed. Because I'd always known that particular woman is professional in that supermarket and somewhat pleasant. But oh man, when she was empowered to no, they only buy one package of toilet paper and that's it. Oh, she turned it a hard ass. No, we just sold you some. You're not allowed to have any more, right?
The
So the sh
toilet paper Karen.
yeah, the toilet paper, because she sent me packing, right? Without the toilet paper or the second package anyway. But anyhow, we reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Masaki Miyagawa. If people feel so inclined, Masaki, is there a way they can get a hold of you, or would you rather have them get a hold of you through me?
They can contact me on my website. It's Masaki.one, O-N-E, Masaki.one. I'm on Instagram at Masaki underscore one, and I have a wide range of energy tools, organite pyramids, and power devices to keep the Wi-Fi off of you
Yes.
and to raise your frequency, right?
Yes.
So.
And to our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to the cosmicswitchboard.com site and become a member. And also, please share these podcasts to your social media platforms, because we're being severely shadow banned and our information is not getting out to as many people as it should. So anyhow, we've reached the end of this first segment, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.